On the Nonlinear Healing Podcast, we talk about all the aspects of healing. The beautiful parts and the painful parts, too. We acknowledge that healing is not linear, and there are many ups and downs in every person's story. And in fact, we celebrate the messy parts just as much as the pretty parts. This is Nonlinear Healing with Courtney Brooke. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Nonlinear Healing Podcast. I'm your host, Courtney Brooke. Oh, I am feeling so good today, and I hope that you all are too. I have been feeling some major energetic shifts since the solar eclipse in Scorpio a little bit earlier this week, or I guess last week now, and things that I just totally did not expect, completely out of left field, really intense at times, but I'm finally feeling some relief from that intensity and feeling really good today. So I hope that you all are feeling good somewhere in this world. And if you're not, hang in there because the bad times can't last forever. I am super excited for Yashika Divine's interview today, but first, just a couple of quick housekeeping items. This month, as far as Exhale, our community support group, we are going to be having three meetings. The first is going to be on November the 10th. That will be at the Mangata in Latrobe. It'll always be on the second Thursday of each month, so if you want to mark your calendar ahead of time, just in case this one doesn't work for you, you are welcome with open arms. We are also going to be in Greensburg on Monday the 14th, so 11:14 at the Space, our home base. And then also on Monday the 21st, that'll be the third Monday of each month, we'll be in Serenity Hill. I am pleased to announce that in November, I am also launching a virtual group. So this is for the person who is maybe experiencing too much anxiety to come to the meeting in person. I see you, and I know that many of us need support and just can't maybe make it work in person. So I'm adding the virtual option, and that will be coming up on the 29th, which I believe is a Tuesday. Pretty sure that's a Tuesday. As far as what else to expect in November, we are going to be having two more episodes drop, and then we're going to take a break for the holidays. Now, I've been playing with the idea of also having some bonus episodes, some solo episodes, so stay tuned. I also wanted to announce that we are currently accepting applications for the next round of interviews. Those will be launching in March, and we're going to be scheduling interviews this month and next month for interviews in January and February. If you would be interested in being featured on the Nonlinear Healing Pod, shoot me a DM. I'd be happy to get the form to you. So, Yashika, I am so excited to share her story with you. It felt like it was really divine timing that her and I connected. It was earlier in the year in May when we had the first solar eclipse. So this is really kind of full circle here a little bit, that hers is being released just after this solar eclipse. But we connected on Instagram on the Dayluna podcast, which is a podcast that I'm obsessed with. It is all about human design. And I was commenting on one of their posts talking about how I wanted to launch this podcast. And I was looking for people who were survivors and recovered persons. And she reached out. So we're going to talk a little bit about human design. You're going to hear us mention it, drop some names and things around it. So I do want to explain what it is here really quickly. So I'm not an expert in human design, but I love it. I think it's really fascinating. Really what it is a system that combines astrology, the Kabbalah or Tree of Life, the I Ching, and Vedic philosophy. And what it really does is it defines our energy types. It kind of breaks it into specific categories, and you can kind of think about it as a playbook for your energy type. So when you hear us talk about things like MG, strategy and authority and all of that, we're talking about human design. I think this stuff can be really super accurate For example, I am a self-projected projector, which means that I make decisions and I manifest using my voice a lot. So makes sense I have a podcast. As a projector energy, I can be kind of off-putting to some people. It's almost like people feel like I can like see right through them, which makes them a little bit uncomfortable. That's the type of energy I have. It's a very penetrative energy. It is meant to see and navigate systems and people. And learning and teaching are also a big part of that energy type. So what do I do as this type of energy? I need to wait to be invited and to be recognized. So I can't just be like running around penetrating people without their consent or wish. So it's a very interesting modality, a way to look at your life. And I think it is a wonderful complement to things like astrology and the Enneagram and things like that, if you like that sort of thing too. So highly encourage you to go look it up. If you just Google human design chart, you're going to find a ton of different ones. So, but who is Yashica? So I gave Yashica the healer archetype because I think that is a huge part of who she is here to embody. She worked in corporate America. Specifically, a lot of her work was in the domestic violence and interpersonal violence realm. But she's also been in the game for a while now. So she's been a holistic life coach since 2012. She left corporate America for good after a series of hardships and loss. She had a spiritual awakening, originally following a great period of darkness in her life, a time in which she was even actively suicidal. And she left America for good and met her husband abroad. And this was only after a great loss that she suffered here in the States. Now, currently, she lives in Berlin as a freelancer. And she's also the co-founder of The Natural Guys. It's a holistic company, and it was founded alongside her husband, Benjamin Bay, who's a master herbalist. They are super fascinating. Their website is beautiful, and I am so grateful and blessed that Yashica came onto the podcast to share her story. I find it so empowering. She is one of those people that once you interact with her, you're going to leave with some type of wisdom or insight or knowledge that you didn't have beforehand. I think she gives so many great pointers, and there's just it's such a rich interview that I am so excited to share it with you all, with my listeners. So, without further ado, I would love to share with you Yashica Divine's story of non-linear healing. Welcome to the Non-Linear Healing Podcast, Yashica Divine. I am so grateful to have you here with us today.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me on to the podcast.
Of course. Yes. I know that it just felt like divine timing how you and I connected. I know that we both follow the De Luna podcast, and clearly we both have an interest in human design. But the more I learned about you, the more I learned that we have a lot of other things in common too.
I'm grateful that that's the thing about social media. It just pulls people in with common interests together. With all the negative stuff that's going on, I'm happy to still be able to have the option and the choice to still be conscious of how I choose my communities. And I'm so happy to have connected with you through that.
Yes, absolutely. All right. So I'm so excited to hear your story. I'm so excited to share it with my audience here. So why don't you take us all the way back? Tell us about, you know, when you were born, when, how the world was, what was going on, maybe a little bit about your family.
Okay, let's start. First of all, I was born in the 80s and was born in the States. He was born in the United States, North Carolina. So let's kind of give us ourselves a visual what was happening in the 80s in the South and Black America, like boom, you know. So you have like hip hop influence. I have a heavy hip-hop influential background from my parents. They were, hip-hop heads, and so I grew up with a lot of cultural awareness around hip-hop, and then not only just hip-hop, but the messages and that were, giving through the music. So I'm very appreciative, and I honor that part of growing up, because I mean the 80s was just an amazing era for me in the early 90s. Lived in low income housing, the typical story from, living in a little small town. So I'm from small town America, from Goldsboro, actually, North Carolina. And I contributed a lot of my development to programs that were there in my community to help me stay focused and also expose me to different things, as far as like entrepreneurship, creativity, science, and technology. I had a very strong community presence, and my parents also just didn't let me go out in the street and just kind of like get influenced by that. But I am a product of my environment, so I'm very grateful to have like experienced so many different sides of the fence, and I contribute a lot of my influence to teachers and volunteers and people who gave back in the community. And so that kind of stuck with me as I went through high school and decided on when I wanted to go to college. And I had so many different thoughts in my mind. I wanted to be a lawyer because I talked so much. That was one of the things growing up, when you start to develop your personality, right? You have teachers that tell you, well, I think you'll make a great this, or actually using some of the things that they pointed out that may have been a issue at the time, end up being your gift, or end up being something that you actually discover within yourself that you can help the world with. So yeah, I went to college. I had a choice to either go to the military or go to college, and because I graduated at 17, my mother wasn't signing any papers for me to go to the military, so I ended up going to university, my historically Black college university in Winston-Salem, and I graduated from there pretty much. So education influence is heavy too. So, I always honor these major influences in my life, what actually shaped me. And it's before I became on and heavy in my enlightenment period. Like we have these cycles in our life where we're born and we're programmed by our community and our family and our school. But then somewhere in our growth span, we get this, what we start questioning. A lot of us start questioning things at a certain age, or start to question a lot of things about ourselves and whether or not we're going down the right path per se,
It sounds to me like you had a lot of really incredible influences, like some good programs and things that you had as a child, and then a lot of family support. Sounds like your parents were very involved, and education, hear that theme around how important that was for you. So overall, it sounds like you had a whole lot of support early in your life.
I did. But also the catch 22 is that can be a lot of pressure at a young age. It can be a lot of pressure for someone who's trying to separate. Maybe there's some toxic stuff going on in the household, but still trying to strive as a student and trying to stay focused in the community, or trying to stay focused on the extracurricular activities, but knowing that there may be some toxic stuff going on at home. And as a young girl, I had to kind of like compartmentalize those things, but ultimately still like push through. And at certain points, still had to acknowledge, what was going on, so that I could not make those same mistakes, or make and just kind of experience those same things that were going on. And all, like I said, it was a lot of pressure, kind of to just be structured, like have a plan. That's why it's like a catch 22, because it's like you want to have a plan. You're told what your plan should be. And then you start following this plan, and then all of a sudden you at a certain point, and I got to my life sometime and in college, like my junior or senior year, and I was like, I don't want to be a lawyer, you know, I kind of don't want that lifestyle, and I don't really know. I started to like feel like I don't really know what was going to happen, and I didn't want to feel like a disappointment, you know, so I still just carried on that pressure and trying to figure it out myself.
So it's like you had a lot of the support and things like that, but in a way, you know, the same people who are looking at you, encouraging you, they're also looking at you, waiting for you to, you know, figure out what you're doing, get your plan, you know. Did you ever have any type of like perfectionist type of tendencies or anything because of that, or?
I know I wouldn't say perfectionist. I just think that it will go, I think it will fall under like this go-getter hustler mentality, because I'm from a very small town. And so everyone will pretty much follow like the same, this is like the small American dream, you know, like everybody follows this, safe, paradigm of, you know, graduate, get a good job, marry, have children, get a big house, you know, just kind of like this Stepford, you know, wife model of what, you know, your typical child or typical person from this area must do in order to succeed. And there was a big thing and from my area was failure and success look like. And that was a lot of pressure because nobody wanted to fail. So everybody had this huge pressure to just try to succeed and look like they were successful. So even though they may have graduated, had a family, and it looked successful, I discovered later on that a lot of people eventually started to, you know, be transparent with themselves about how really miserable or how unsure they were about some things, or how tired they were of a certain thing, or how unfulfilled that they were, especially if they lived like just this, like I said, this programmed robotic lifestyle of just like working, going home, working and clocking in. And I had a lot of heavy influence of people telling me that I could kind of just do whatever I wanted to do. You know, I could do whatever. There was no limitation. I give credit, though, to a lot of role models, a few role models in my life. What really sparked my interest into like exploring outside of my small town was seeing some of the older girls that were in a higher grade than me. Once they got to college, I started seeing one in particular, and I always give her credit. I love her so much. She's doing amazing things now. And has been doing amazing things for years. She studied abroad 1 year when she was in college. And I think I may have been like a freshman or a sophomore at the time, but she was a senior and she took the opportunity to study, like, I think in England somewhere. And that just took me. I mean, I was like, wow, she's in another country. Oh my God, that has to be an experience. And that right there was just like my spark of like, there has to be something out there bigger that I get to explore in the world, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So you're kind of like looking around your small town, seeing a lot of these people, they got these cookie cutters, white picket fence thing. But then sounds like, you know, junior, senior year, you start seeing that maybe these people aren't as happy as they act like they are. And you see see this other person who's traveling abroad and you're like, maybe something more like that.
Yeah. Because the only way for me to know, and then this is also like fast forwarding to when I started to study HD, human design, I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm supposed to really be in a six profile and knowing that that's a third line, you know, life. I was like, oh, man, maybe I really am supposed to just get out here no matter if I make mistakes, no matter what. I just need to put myself in a different environment. I don't need to conform to this timeline of 4 years here. And then if you want to do a master's, an extra two. And if you want to go for PhD, then you go extra here. And then you do this, you apply for, I mean, I just didn't want to live that cookie cutter, you know, suit and tie lifestyle, even though it was attractive. And even though it was programmed through media and through, you know, people trying to encourage you to get up out of the area that you live in, it was an option, but it did not feel good to me. You know, it was too much, too much red tape, too much pressure. And then one of the key turning points is when I started to see the trends of the global crisis that were starting to really appear and make me really look at the world differently when there was like the 2008, recession, and then seeing other people panic and how they had to, figure out alternatives for their life really quick because they didn't have a plan B, or their lifestyle was just totally locked into corporate America and being controlled by just, a system that can say, hey, we don't need you, or hey, we don't have the funds anymore, or hey, your life can change just because there's a global crisis going on. Fast forwarded to what's been happening right now, was another turning point. And I'm sure it's been another turning point for other individuals as well to say, hey, wait a minute, I need to develop another system just in case something happens and the rug is snatched from under me. You know, the curtain is pulled back and the people that's trying to control everything is exposed. And now I'm caught in between of trying to, be led like a sheep. And I did not want to be led, I did not want to be led into anything blindly or put my trust into a system that never was intended for me to trust in the first place. According to my background and my history, my lineage, and knowing where I'm from and knowing what has happened to culturally to my ancestors for a lot of years, So yeah, that was an opportunity for me to kind of like change it up a little bit, because I saw people going through so much of turmoil during that 2008 recession. And then so that became like, okay, how can you recession proof? Because this word recession just started coming up. How can you recession proof this or recession proof that back in 2008? And the only thing I could think of was being an entrepreneur, working for myself.
All right. So then, what did you end up finishing your schooling with? Was it like a bachelor's of science in business, or what did you study?
Well, this is the funny part. This is why when we talk about non-linear and things just not being not conventional, a part of my studies reflect that. And I started off actually in political science, and that's how I figured out like, I don't want to study this. I don't want to be a lawyer. So then I switched to criminal justice, and I was like, well, at least let me learn the laws and let me kind of get familiar with that, because like I said, my influence from back home just kind of shaped that. I really wanted justice, like I really wanted to know so that I and other people couldn't be taken advantage of through language or through some written laws that may word itself in a way that trying to trick people or get people under their ruling or their law and out of ignorance. So so that's why I studied that. Then after I completed that, this was around 2008. Like I said, I was supposed to graduate around then. The recession happened and I was like getting cold feet, and I was getting that senioritis where I was like, well, I'm gonna just maybe just stay another year. And so I stayed another year and I started to explore sociology and the study of people and then the study of human behavior and psychology. And so I sat in my advisor's office and I was like, okay, I just want to study a few more things before I graduate. And she told me, she said, well, you will come out with a degree in interdisciplinary studies. And I didn't know what that meant. And I was like, well, what is interdisciplinary studies? And she was like, it just means that you have a diverse background in what you studied when you got your degree, and you have your degree in this area. And I was like, okay, cool. So I was like, well, I'll come out with an interdisciplinary degree then. So that was like my first non-traditional, because you don't really hear people getting interdisciplinary degrees. It's just like either social work or nursing or criminal justice or IT, very specific. And interdisciplinary reflected my journey at that moment, because I wanted to grab information from everywhere to apply it to something that I create, something that I can nurture in the future. Whatever business that I wanted to establish, I wanted to come from so many different areas.
Yeah. So that's sounds to me like your real like first deviation there. You're like, no, yeah. I'm doing my own thing. I'm gonna do this interdisciplinary thing. And then bam, here comes the recession. And yeah. Now you're like, okay, all right, I guess I got to pivot here a little bit too. You start doing what? The entrepreneurial thing, right?
Yeah, I started doing more of researching like nonprofits, researching how I can, you know, establish my own organization to help people, because I was, like I said, already attached to working with domestic violence victims and women who are surviving those relationships or situations and children, and establish something that's less victimizing and labeling and more empowering, and something that's more solution-based and practical and something that they can work through in so many different areas. You know, working with that one whole person versus just focusing on victimizing them or labeling them a victim of a situation that they went through. Because we all go through things, you know, we may revisit them in our life and we may go back and think about some of the tragedies that has happened to us and the hurtful things. And yes, we do grow. We actually want to grow through those things and be empowered, but it has to be, sometimes it just has to be like, you need a force behind you to expose you to what it is to what a freedom looks like, what that sense of liberation and empowerment looks like. So I wanted my organization to reflect that. I wanted my voice, my message to reflect that it can look any kind of way, as long as you, you know, come up with this practical sense of now gathering your tools, your healing tools to go about your life, you know? So that's that's how I did. I took that time to really go in within myself to figure out, well, what can I do different? And, you know, but still bring the same message. It's like nothing is new under the sun and you can't reinvent the wheel ultimately, but you can add your own unique spin, you know, of your little bit of sparkle to the world.
Yeah, absolutely. So you start to get this drive to create this empowerment focused sort of organization that is working with people who've been through domestic violence and things like that. Can I ask, did you ever have, you know, like loved ones who dealt with it, or did you witness it, or like what kind of drew you to the domestic or interpersonal violence group of people?
You know, it was really an empathetic eye. My parents, you know, as structured as they were, you know, as focus driven as they were, and protective of the family as they were, them in a relationship, that was a whole nother different story. You know, they were great providers. I love my mom. I love my stepdad, but them two in a relationship, that's what took me out of the whole, you know, kind of like detachment viewpoint. Like I detached myself as a child really early because I was like, you know what, the type of interaction is just not healthy. And I don't think that's right. You're not supposed to be saying these things to the people that you say you're supposed to love. And then actual, you know, violent tendencies may come from out of that. So that's where it started. And so that was years and years and years of just kind of like building up this empathy for men, because I'll see oftentimes too, and I saw firsthand how women can be the aggressor. Women can be the aggressor and the person who are that could provoke, you know, violent behavior in many ways. And a lot of time men would just, you know, some men would just take it and take it and take it until they can't take it anymore. And then also the opposite too. Some men just, you know, are out there that are just straight up aggressive and didn't have father figures in this on the other side as well. So I, from having that type of, you know, firsthand experience, when I went off to college, I just wanted to start to figure out, you know, my lane. And I chose my very first lane was this domestic violence area. And it just resonated so much. It lit me up, you know, as an MG, it just lit me up. And I see that now, now having this knowledge of human design, I'm like, wow. And I just, it was a yes for me. And so, ironically, you know, in our life, when we choose something, when we consciously make a choice to say, this is what it is, this is what I want, I'm determined to go here and go there and do this, somewhere down the line, our gangster's going to be challenged. We're going to be challenged by what we say, what we are, and by what we do. And so, yeah, I was challenged early when I was probably 18 or 19 in a relationship that was just very toxic, you know, to say the least. It wasn't like the typical domestic violence where I was just like getting beat up, but he showed heavy signs of that narcissist behavior at a young age. And because I was already aware of it, I was in a little rebellious stage. So I just kept on, you know, actively participating in the relationship at that young age. But eventually he became like my case study in terms of like, wow, I can't imagine like now that you will treat another person this way. And then as time grew on, you know, I got away from him after like a year and a half, 2 years. And that was my next wake up to, okay, yeah, it domestic violence and intimate partner violence and abuse just can look so many different ways, and people have so many different things going on with them that they can just be vulnerable in so many different areas, and another person can come and just take advantage of them in that type of way. So yeah.
Well, I'm a domestic violence survivor, and I think it is important to note that a lot of times with interpersonal violence, you know, it does become bi-directional quite often. Mm-hmm. And we know that most often we do see women who come forward with these accounts, but that it does happen to men as well. Yeah. And I mean, one of the things, I'm a trauma-informed therapist, so one of the things that I always explain to my patients and my clients are, you know, hurt people, right? Yeah. So there's a reason that these men are going around and hurting women if they are, right? There's right. some sort of underlying hurt or pain there too. So, and it sounds to me like, you know, you witnessed some of this stuff growing up and kind of had an idea of, you know, what was right and what was wrong. But at the same time, these sort of the drama and the toxicity and things like that is somewhat romanticized in modern culture. And I think it's really interesting how we, you know, even when we're in those situations and we realize that it's not right, we still get caught in those cycles sometimes. And, you know, you tell me, because you work mostly with domestic violence and things, but it sounds to me like, I know my situation anyways, the only way I was able to escape was with a lot of help and a lot of support and a lot of people.
Right. Absolutely.
People rooting for me.
Absolutely. It definitely, the support matters. Having that community helps. I started to facilitate support. That's where my passion for facilitating and coaching, I started to develop and discover that within me, because although my titles, let's say at the domestic violence shelter, I was the intake shelter counselor. So, you know, I would do the first intake, and that's where they would tell me their story, and I would process them. And I was there mostly during the night, third shift. So I would see the women restless, can't sleep, come down to the office to talk to me. And that's where I really started to implement more of a group setting, a group community setting with support groups where everyone's able to kind of share and tell their story. And most people, you can learn from one another in that way. I see that the community and the support, the tools, the resources, all of that helps and it matters. And I just want it to be an additional resource, an additional tool. No matter where you are at, I was able to assess any individual, wherever they were at, you know, especially in the beginning, if it's a crisis, you know, I was trained to handle crisis. You know, I was in charge of the crisis line. If someone's calling crying or they're in an emotional wave or they're ready to get out now, and you have to get up in the middle of the night and, you know, help them get settled in to the space that was safe for them. It was just creating these safe spaces really has played a huge part of where I am now in my coaching and my business and just my overall lifestyle.
Yeah. And so, all right. So then you were kind of like, you had just wrapped up in college, you're doing this work with domestic violence, but, you know, at some point it sounds to me like you had studied abroad or you had decided to travel somewhat.
I had to. The opportunity presented itself. I got so many different recommendations, you know, people saying, do it, it'll change your life forever, you know, just get that experience. And once again, you know, not knowing back then, I was, living out a third line process. I was like, I'm getting ready to do it, you know, and went in. I just randomly went into my, you know, department one day in college, and I was like, well, what do I have to do? You know, that was a part, also part of me growing up and, you know, just learning to ask questions, you know, and a lot, sometimes they, people say close mouth don't get fed. You don't know until you ask. And so I just walked into the department one day and I was like, well, what do I have to do to go to another country? I want to be an exchange student, you know, like on the movies where someone from another country flips and flops with another person and they go to the other person's school. And my at that time, my advisor, I remember him, he was this old hippie dude. And mind you, I went to an all-black college, university, HBCU, Winston-Salem State University. And he was like one of the old white hippie dudes sitting in the office. And he was like, yeah, so this is what you have to do. You have to have this GPA and you have to apply and then you choose your college. And so I looked at the requirements and I was like, I was like, let me give myself one semester to get my GPA where I need it. And I did. And I ended up going to Concordia University in Montreal in 2010. Yeah.
Wow. So you got to travel there a little bit. And it sounds like you kind of manifested that a little bit, right? You're just like, hey, I want to do this thing. And it just happened, right?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. And so what was that time period like for you? Walk me through that experience.
Oh, man. It was one that I will never, ever, ever forget. At the time when I was developing my organization, my nonprofit, I was somewhat going against the grain, like I said, because mostly everybody was just doing their 4 years, getting out, getting a job, and that was it. And you saw less people, you know, at that time venturing off to do independent things or being self-employed or becoming an entrepreneur. So I was kind of going against the grain. And although like I had people that say they support me and they proud of me and all that, I still felt like I didn't really believe that, you know. I was like, well, if I just really did not, you know, feel that warmth or that genuine support. So when I went to Montreal, I had already decided before I declared, affirmed, and I set forth that this would change my life. With all these experiences that are going to happen at this time, I'm just going to just go for it no matter what happens. And I went there and I was exposed to communities that were open, accepting, loving. We were just so in tune. Everything that I wanted to discover about myself intellectually was just placed there. It was just so much diversity and I had so much to explore. It was overwhelming. And I ultimately really didn't have, at that time, didn't have the support that I, you know, was yearning for, because back home, my mom and my family, they were going through some other things. They were going through the typical things that were happening that would normally happen. And I was just off doing some extra amazing things that, you know, at that time, people really could, you know, especially my family, really just, they could say, I support you, but they really, it just wasn't really resonating with me. And I was still questioning, why am I here? Like, I'm in a whole nother country and I'm still going through this questioning, like, why am I here? And I mean, is this really right? I mean, nobody really is they really supporting me? I just had so many internal questions at that time. And ultimately what happened was that I had like this mental breakdown. I had like an exhaustion of just, my mind just couldn't take anymore because I was still connected to what was going on back home. Like all the toxic stuff and toxic behaviors and interactions where it had to do with my mom or family members or just, you know, people that I should not have like brought with me over there and inside, like just brought them. I should have detached myself and just tried to, you know, cope. But I was just still yearning for this community and resonance that everything's going to be okay. Sometimes you just need to hear that everything's going to be okay. You're doing a great job. And I'm so happy for you and I love you and I support you. And so during that time, like, I mean, I had a great time. I met new people, but I was still this just individual kind of lost I was in another country and I was still feeling lost.
Yeah.
And I just went through this terrible breakdown where I started questioning my value. What am I doing? Am I even supposed to be here? You know, I was just really questioning a lot. And I went outside of myself and went out and just in walking around, and I really had contemplated suicide. And as strong as I am, as bubbly as my personality is, that's why you can't really take suicide based off of someone just being depressed or being low. You can't, it doesn't have a face on it. The most happiest people Absolutely. In the world can be depressed, you know? And so I was like one of those people, especially when I went over there to Montreal, because, you know, I just didn't feel the excitement. I didn't feel, you know, what I thought I would feel because I just, my past, my childhood, my trauma from, you know, interaction with my mom and what she had going on in her toxic relationship, all that stuff was just dragging my spirit. And I did contemplate it. I did walk out and just try to just walk around. I try to walk it off me at first. And then next thing you know, I just was like, I'm just going to walk out into some traffic. And wow. You know, I went and walked into some traffic. And when I say that was divine intervention, every single car slowed down. It was a moment that I never, ever forget. Every single car slowed down and they were like, it was like a freeway. So it was like, boom, 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 boom. Cars was just going back and forth. And so I closed my eyes and just walked out into traffic. And when I thought I was going to get hit, I peeked and I opened my eyes and all the cars had slowed down. And one lady, she just looked at me. I'll never forget. She looked at me in my eyes and she mouthed like, what are you doing? And I looked at her and I just ran across the street. And that moment, I just was like, okay, I'm supposed to be here. I'm sorry. I just started apologizing. I was like, I shouldn't have done that. I'm supposed to be here. I'll figure it out. You know, I don't know who I was talking to at that time, but I was just like, I'll figure it out. Because if I was not supposed to be here, then I would have left at that moment. I would have got hit or something would have happened. I was like, I'll just figure it out. I'm supposed to be here.
Wow.
And yeah, I end up just going into the hospital and just getting some recovery. And when I spoke with the doctors, that I remember him saying, girl, you just need a vacation. You got it. Because I was telling him all this stuff, like, because I'm a talker. So I'm like, yeah, I'm graduating here and I'm this and this and I got this plan and this plan. And he's like, there's nothing wrong with you. You just need a vacation. And I was like, so there's nothing wrong. You know, like, I'm okay. And he's like, yeah, like, you're fine. You know, just stay here for a few days if you need some extra support. You know, and in Canada, I just had to big Canada up for their health care. Because at that time, they took so much good care of me when I did have to go to the hospital there. So.
Wow. Wow. So sounds to me like, you know, you were in the middle of this transformation and mm-hmm. having traveled and going through it. But, you know, like many times of transformation, you had this darkness, right? Like you had this dark moment that really kind of cleared things up for you a little bit and you're able to kind of take a step back and say like, wow, maybe there is a reason for me being here. There is a something greater than me at play. And, you know, I heard a lot of different things earlier. You talked about, you know, how all the pressure and things like that. And it sounds like it kind of just built up over those years until yeah. it ended up being, you know, in that moment of probably a little bit less support than typical, because at least before you were living in your own country, once you're outside of your country, your support is a little bit more limited and it just kind of broke down for you where yeah. you just had all this overwhelm. And at the same time, you know, it was something that was life-changing for you in some positive way, right?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So many stuff started happening after that. I mean, oh my goodness, like just different encounters. I remember walking down the street and this girl, she just appeared and she had all these books in her hand. And the books were like these yogi books, you know, like the evolution of human books. It was really, really deep. A lot of esoteric, you know, occult information that explored different types of, you know, how the world works or what's going on behind the scenes and stuff like that. So she had like these books and she looked at me and she said, they're for you. Now, mind you, I didn't analyze. I didn't know who this woman was. I didn't think she was, you know, weirdo or anything. I just immediately, it resonated that she's delivering this knowledge and this information to me at the time. I need whatever is in these books. And that's how much I was becoming more in tune and aware of signs and synchronicities and vibrations. That's when I started to realize the more I vibrated higher and I started to not focus on the negative, not focus on the low vibrating stuff. You know, I allowed it to impact me and pull me down so much that I contemplated suicide. So once I contemplated suicide and I went into the, you know, hospital and regrouped and, you know, actually started to speak about things that were going on, everybody was like, wait, but your life is, you know, everything that you're saying is so empowering, it's so great, you could be the next Oprah. And I mean, I was being compared to so many different people in the world that inspires the world, and I'm like, really? I'm like, me? And so when I realized I started to raise my vibrations with my thoughts, and I started to see things differently, and I was walking down and like I was just happy, I was whistling, it was one of the moments that was just like, you know, feeling great. And this girl came to me with these books and I had some coins in my hands. And she said, I don't care if you give me money or you don't, I want to give you these books. And so when she said that, I gave her like maybe 3 or 4 Canadian bucks and took the books back and I explored those books. And I mean, it just took you through. So it took you through human evolution and talked about death, and it talked about so many different things. I think I might have had, like, I got exposed to different higher thoughts of life, you know, seeing life differently and accepting and honoring where I am. And so that moment of just kind of like changing up the frequency, I was forever changed, you know. Ever since then, it was like I just encountered more and more people who were vibrating at the same or similar frequency at that time that I was at the same during that time.
Yeah. So you meet this random girl, she kind of sends you on this trajectory, and kind of like pushes you into this new frequency that you've never been in before.
Yeah.
That was that kind of the moment that led you to where you are now, or, you know, what led you to where you are now? Because I know that you're living out in Germany, you're running your own business and everything. So
yeah.
How'd you get from there to there?
Yeah, I mean, it's same, you know, it's all about, you know, manifesting your reality and planting the seed. You know, I knew early that I wanted to, that experience in Montreal set forth the tone that, hey, I can really be, you know, live outside of the country. I think this is cool, you know, because I just experienced so much of, you know, BS, you know, and through where I'm from and just being in that southern region, it just comes with its own vortex of bullshit, you know. It comes with its own vortex of spells and, you know, history and just darkness and blood on the lands and people still carrying the still toxic cycles of mentalities of hate and all this. And it was just sucky. It was just really dark. It's like a vampire. So I had to, you know, once I got outside of that, and then I basically kind of got like cleansed and renewed and went through this whole metamorphosis. By the time and remind you that it was just for a semester, so I had to come back. When I came back, that was the moment I was like, okay, from now on, now that I'm back, I'm going to work hard so that I can permanently live outside of the country. Like, I thought that was just the best thing. Like, I wanted to, you know, design my life in the way that can carry me into any place that I wanted to live. But I also had shadow work and work that I needed to do back home, because I knew from that experience where my trauma was. Like, I knew from that experience what I had to heal from, what I had to forgive, what I had to let go, and the work that I needed to do to be okay. Cause I'm not a runner. I don't run and try to go and, you know, just kind of run away from any trauma or things that have happened to me. I face them. I'm a warrior, you know, so I face those experiences. And when I came back home, it was just time to work towards, you know, creating the life that I have now, actually. So yeah, I just worked really hard.
Yeah.
Just worked really hard to maintain that same mind frame. Even when I came back in the country, it was kind of like a reverse culture shock, because I was like, wow, y'all still, people still talking about this. You're still being controlled by the media. You're still just, oh my goodness. You know, and even though I was gone for a semester, it felt like just a long period of time where I was able to just get a new sense of being, you know, I explore new possibilities and what life could be like, you know, just being in somewhere different. It activated different things with inside of me, you know, where you're from, you know, and the things that you're programmed with, you're programmed in any type of environment. So by the time I got back, my mission was ultimately to continue to put myself in communities that support me. So it was finding other brothers and sisters who was exploring the same depths of science and knowledge and information that I was. And then I could come together with them and study with them and explore with them and plan with them. And that's ultimately how I got exposed to human design, like in 2011, through different study groups. You know, I was first studying astrology, and this is funny, I was studying astrology, and because I was just becoming a part of like this global international sisterhood called the Queen by All Means. And we, you know, it was just helping me develop as a young woman. I was like I was early 20s. So I was like developing into a young woman, and I wanted to just like be a noble woman. I wanted to be like a great, you know, inspiring person. So I put myself around those people. I made sure that I connected with those people who are inspiring, who lifestyle reflected that of health and wellness and righteousness and all that. And so I did, and it led me to studying astrology. And from astrology, I had like these two teachers. They pulled me to the side. They were like, hey, I think you're really going to dig human design. I was like, human design? They was like, yeah, I think you will really dig it, you know. And so next thing you know, I just really became a student hardcore. Like, I could not stop studying it. I loved it.
And so you discovered human design in 2011.
Yeah.
And so walk me through this, because I know it sounds to me like you were living back in North Carolina when you discovered that, right?
Yep. I was living back in North Carolina. Yep.
Yeah. But at some point, I think you moved to New Jersey. Is that right?
Yep, I did. So 2011, like I said, I discovered this new science. And so therefore I was getting so many downloads, so many aha moments. And then afterwards I wanted to, you know, figure out a new experience. Like it was time for me to get a new experience. I'm in my early 20s and I'm in my third line. I'm climbing up, you know, getting almost to the roof, but I was like, I want to experience something else. I don't want to live here. I want to go somewhere else. And so, I mean, then I was open to like putting in applications. This was after I graduated. I got my degree already. So I have my degree. I'm back home. I studied abroad. My resume looks fabulous, you know? So I'm like, well, let me test and go into the work field now for a few years, because I did want to set myself up for success. And entrepreneurs, you know, oftentimes it takes a while, you know, to build an amazing business or just to build that, you know, income so that you can be independent and be self-employed. And sometimes it takes a while. And I'm all for people working a 9-to-5 or working in their field or corporate America and long enough to make that leap into entrepreneurship. And that's what I did. So I found a job in New Jersey. And I moved there in 2014. And yeah, I just pretty much took that leap out and started to save and build up my brand. But in 2012, I became a certified life coach, because I knew it just made sense after I came back and started studying and how I could like use this knowledge now to be a part of my my business plan. So I was able to get my certification in 2012. And then in 2014, I moved to New Jersey.
Okay, so you're building up your brand, you're a certified life coach. I am assuming you're probably working like, you know, full time and doing coaching and things like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was doing so much. I was trying to do everything. that felt good, and I was multitasking and everything felt great. The only thing that, you know, I didn't have, like, was focusing on was like family life, like having a boyfriend or husband or, you know, and a child. That part of my life, I, you know, kind of just set to the side because I was focused on my career, and there wasn't a person that was lined up in my life to, you know, for me to even share or go down that road with. So yeah, I did, you know, Jersey, and I worked in an agency, and I just further explored the possibility of how I can pull my gifts out. So I use my 9-to-5s to test out certain things. You know, I didn't step over boundaries. I was known for like the spirit. I was always a spiritual person at work. Everybody knew I had the sage and the crystals and everything. So everybody kind of knew, you know, a little bit about what I did outside of work, but I couldn't, you know, step over boundaries and try to, you know, I just let that be its own lane. And I just was there to, you know, pretty much explore different, you know, ways that I could impact another person. Yeah.
So everybody knows you're the spiritual guru. Everybody's coming to you for that kind of stuff, and you're living your life in New Jersey and, you know, working, building your business and everything, and family kind of goes on the back burner a little bit, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Which,
yeah,
happens.
Mm-hmm. It did. But at a certain point, I wanted to revisit it. You know, I wanted to, you know, have a family. A lot of my comrades and people around me would kind of did the opposite. It was like family. Everybody kind of did family first, and then maybe someone else discovered, okay, I can do this now that my child is this age, or I have to be a mom and a wife first before I can get my degree. And then sometimes you saw the fusion, you know, sometimes you saw people doing both and everything. And I was always a shoulder for people to come and talk to and, you know, just kind of bare their soul. And yeah, I've just got so many different viewpoints about life in general and how people can move with or without family, or, you know, have a child, or how, you know, how they can make their career better with the family, or how to intertwine their career and family life and business and all of that. But eventually I, you know, went through a turning point. Also, I went through several turning points. So like, I mean, goodness gracious, my life was just like just a ball of hardcore experiences. Not necessarily like everybody's pathway is different, you know, nobody's like more toxic than the other or more trauma than the other. Trauma is trauma. When you go through something that brings you about change of events in your life, and it just turns your life upside down, trauma is trauma. And so eventually I was going through a period in New Jersey where I did end up getting pregnant. And that moment, I knew that this is like crazy because I've never been pregnant before. You know, I don't know what it feels like. I didn't know what it felt like. Never had a miscarriage. My body was my first time ever conceiving. And it just really mentally took me, like, again, just like with the experience of moving out of country, this is why mental health is so important. You have to stay proactive and you have to stay on top of your mental health all the time, doing things that, and being consciously aware of what is your limit. You know, what is it that, where do you need help? Where do you need to reach out for help? At what point before it goes, you know, or blows up? And when I got pregnant, I think then and there is when I should have had more support than what I did. But I was so far away in New Jersey. Again, I was away from home. I did not have the support, again, that I was desiring. So I actually went back home, and I was really under a lot of distress during that time. And eventually had to experience a loss after I gave birth, about 6 or 7 months afterwards. And that again put me against all odds of in life having to experience another death, you know, another turning point in my life where it was like, okay, I'm doing this in career, I'm traveling, I'm living life. Then I get pregnant, and then boom, I go back home and have her, and then a few 6 months later she passes. So I gave birth and had a death in the same year, in 2019.
Wow. So you welcome a child into your life and 6 months later are having to say goodbye.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a trauma that a lot of people would not have been able to get through without a lot of help and support. So talk to me about, you know, what was that time period like for you? How did you get through that?
Oh my goodness. I literally had to reach back. At this point, it's 2019. Mind you, I've been on my, you know, enlightenment path, my ascension consciously since 2011. I've been like proactively and hard body, like advocating for healing on so many different levels since 2011. And then I come into this tragedy in 2019, and it wasn't so easy for me to just say, okay, you know, this is a part of the spiritual experience. Her spirits went on. It was like, no, I don't have anything. My life is over. You know, I went through that period where I'm like, what just happened? I blinked and I was pregnant. I blinked again and she was gone. What in the world just happened? You know, and I just had a huge weight to lift off of me when it came to this grief. Because again, I look at everything as a lesson, and you know, of course I'm human and I feel things, but I knew that I was being again used and challenged for this role, this way of life that I'm living. And a part of what helped me was that I was able to just use all of my tools. I was just able to go back and just be like, okay, well, let me, you know, explore more about my spirituality using my credentials, you know, as a ordained minister. You know, like I'm an ordained minister at that point. So I was ending just some times in my life. And when I lost her, I just felt like, okay, I can use this as opportunity to like perform her funeral, you know. And I did so in a way that wasn't traditional. I cremated her body and I went to, you know, the beach and said some words and, you know, kind of let some of her ashes go. And it was really just taking control and taking charge of the narrative. Did I want to be the girl? Did I want to be like sad and dark and go and, you know, stuck into this traumatic experience? Or did I want to use what I know that I've been using for so many years and push through and, you know, attract the support that I need, be open and vulnerable with the people that come into my life, and continue to just use my voice? That's all I know that I can do is use my voice.
Yeah. And I think that, like, you know, you did say you had that moment where you let yourself sit with it and just sit in the darkness for a moment and be like, you know, what just happened? And yeah, let yourself grieve and let yourself experience the loss. But then also, you know, reaching for the tools, going back to your spirituality, going back to your roots and digging deep for that purpose, that greater sense of purpose and meaning that helps bring us out of that dark place then. Yeah. And I just want to highlight, you know, the importance of both of those things and that they live together, right? You can't have the light without first going through that darkness and letting yourself experience that. Because I've talked to a few different people who've had very significant losses and things like that. And, you know, I think sometimes what happens is people fight against that initial grief, right? And they don't want to experience that grief, or they hold it all in. And it's like, you kind of have to let that out. You have to let yourself experience that first. And then after you've gone through that experience, then we start looking for the light. How do I gravitate towards the light? You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm still grieving. Grieving is like, it looks like so many different ways. And so grief just can look like anger, look like sadness, depression, or, you know, it can look like happiness, you know, just reflecting on the happy times or whatever, you know, like this was my first time ever going through something, you know, so traumatic that, like, even so in my mind, sometimes I'm like, did it really happen? You know, I'm like, wow, it was so quick and it was so fast. And I'm like, it was just so impactful that it sent me, you know, into this darkness, a dark moment, dark abyss. Like, now I have to look deep inside of my own self now, even further, and just rediscover. Life was just all about these rediscoveries and these, you know, moments of just ahas, like, okay, let me acknowledge this and now find something that's going to, how I can move on in her honor now, because her life and legacy would not be in vain, even though she was only here for 6-7 months. Still, you know, her life, I carried her and, you know, I bonded with her, and I know what it feels like to be a mother, and I know what I've envisioned for my life and what my motherhood would look like and what I wanted to teach and pass down. I'm such a preparer. Like, I prepare for everything. Like, I wanted to homeschool, I wanted to world school, and I had all these plans. And so it actually set me down now to, you know, it was like this catch 22, like you could plan all day long, you know, to do stuff and to do these things. But now if life takes you on a different course, how are you going to regroup from that? You know, how are you going to like come back from the original plan? Now you have to, should you go on with another plan? Should you try to do it again? Or what does that, you know, moment look like? And that's what ultimately brought me here to Berlin, Germany, is now just kind of rerouted me here.
Yeah. I think what you're describing, it's bringing to mind the story of the two arrows. Are you familiar mm-hmm. with this story, the Buddhist story of the two arrows?
No, I'm not.
Yeah. So, you know, in the Buddhist tradition, they talk a lot about suffering, a lot of it coming from over-attachment, right? Over-attachment to the stories. Well, this is what it's going to look like for me, and this is what it's supposed to be. And then when life changes what we think it's supposed to be, how a lot of times that's what brings suffering. So in the two arrow, the parable of the two arrows talks about, you know, the first arrow that is shot at us, like life shoots that at us, right? Life yeah. hurts us. Life is painful. And then a lot of times what happens is we shoot ourselves with a second arrow in a way, because, you know, we get the second arrow is really our reaction to the suffering, our reaction to the pain. And it's like, you know, life hurts us, and then we hurt ourselves by, mm-hmm. oh, what does this mean? What, having gone through this now, what does this mean about me and how different my life is going to look? And, you know, right. getting stuck in that over attachment or that stagnation that sometimes comes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That makes perfect sense. I mean, you don't really know. And then we place ourselves under so much pressure, you know, to maybe even convince ourselves that we are healed or ready, you know, to do something different, you know. But, you know, just working, I know, well, some of the things that helped me, you know, really is to just move forward through healing experiences, you know, and it brought me back to nature, because I've always been on the path to holistic practices and you know, just healing through nature, whatever that means, whether it was herbalism or, you know, just different types of healing modalities. And it brought me back there, you know, it definitely brought me back to that place again, and creating and being creative and teaching and just being someone who I can still create this legacy for. And the other turning point that brought me here is when I met my now husband. We got reconnected when I lost my daughter. And so these moments happen after something major happened. And then, you know, every step after that is just like treading lightly and just being grateful and just still pushing forward. And when I got reconnected with my husband, and we started to just sit. We bonded on healing. And that was the thing, you know, I was very open, and he was open about what was he was going through, and I was going through, and we bonded because we both were in a healing space. Even though something traumatic happened to us, we didn't want to be traumatized and victimized, where we just were bonding through trauma, where like some people just kind of trauma bond. We mm-hmm. bonded through healing, and you know, like I said before, with solution based and practicality. And so he introduced me to working with herbs and herbalism through products, and he introduced me to working with soap and working with so many different elements of nature and creating actual products from them. And that just opened me up so much. And we took our time to develop, you know, a relationship, a business partnership. And, you know, here we are, you know, and that's why I said the support is really key. You know, we don't live on an island. We're not in, you know, by ourselves, and we're not supposed to be going through things by ourselves. We need support, you know, from, you know, our community, our tribe, our family, friends. It really does matter.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And now you're living over in Germany with your husband, and you guys are running your own business and everything. And, yes. You know, it's certainly been a nonlinear journey for you, but,
yes,
you know,
it's been all over the place.
Yeah. But that's a beautiful thing too, right? It's this, yeah. It's the beauty of all of the shades of life, all of the darkness and the light, and how they come together to form this, eternal, meaningful experience that is exactly what you're supposed to be experiencing, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I know you've mentioned a couple of things. But for our listeners, why don't you go ahead and name some of the specific tools that have been really instrumental to you in your healing journey?
Okay, so let's start with community, like that, you know, collective community, collective consciousness community. That one has been so effective for me personally, growing and having questions and then gravitating towards people of like minds. I think that is always going to be important, whether you're in a virtual space or you're in the physical space. You know, me before all of the Twitter and Facebook and all Instagram started become, you know, consuming the internet, I love doing meetups. I love going in person, love support groups. I love going in spaces where we all can collectively heal and pull everything together and talk about experiences. So that's like one of the number one thing, one of the tools is just that human connection, support groups and experiences and collective consciousness with people of like minds, right? And also, you know, one of the other tools is just that infusion of psychology, you know, education, astrology, sociology, human design, all of these different types of frameworks that helps you get into alignment with your true nature and find out things that, you know, you have experienced from the past. Like just because you were born here, just because you was raised here, just because you was raised in a certain area, that means that you have been programmed environmentally. But there's also a thing that happens where you can take yourself out of that environment and start to decondition and start to reprogram and start to shift in another direction. And you have every right to do that if what's been working or what hasn't been working for you in the past is something that you want to change. You know, if you know that this place brings you, you know, too many bad memories or too much anxiety or too much darkness, you have every right to choose again where another geographical location area can help you. So I learned that through astrology and how studying how the planets move and how that affects me and what skills that I have that I have built up in my character that I can use. So meditation. I'm also a meditation teacher, so I've studied different aspects of, you know, quieting and being still, because as much as I talk, I love silence. I love to be quiet, you know, as much as I love talking, I love being quiet the same. And all of these things, it's just working from just a huge framework of things and then just picking and choosing and building my own curriculum. That's just kind of what stayed with me in college, is that you can build your own curriculum. When I found out about that, you know, interdisciplinary degree, I was like, man, you know, as I got older, I've always would been able to pull from this or pull from this doctrine or pull from this principle, pull from these different universal principles, which is another thing that has also been a tool. It's just studying nature, studying the laws of nature, you know, just being observant of how energy is, universal laws and the law of attraction, and just being focused being focused on healing, being focused on what you want to attract, and not being so hard on yourself about that too, you know, and just allowing things to come about. So like there's so many different tools, you know, I mean, I could talk about yoga and I could talk, and you know, it's just so much, you know, especially with herbalism. And I started studying herbalism in like 2011. And so, I mean, going on retreats, I mean, there's so many different things. You can go in and find a place or a space or an environment that will support you. And wherever you are, there's so many different communities and groups and retreats and spaces and sacred spaces and healing spaces around the world that are there for people on their journey, wherever they are in life.
Yes, yes. And I cannot agree more. I love the idea of building your own curriculum. And the way that I always describe it to my patients and my clients is, you know, you need to have a really wide variety of tools, because think about it like this. If you have a toolbox and the only tool you have in there is a hammer, mm-hmm. you're going to be pretty limited in what kind of problems you're going to be able to solve with a hammer, you right. know? And, you know, sometimes you're going to need a wrench. Sometimes you're going to need a saw. Sometimes you're going to need a screwdriver. And you got to have that toolbox nice and full of various tools so that you can handle the different things that life throws at you. So any last words of wisdom or advice that you would leave for our audience about your healing journey, or if, you know, if somebody's in the middle of their dark time, or, you know, they're in the bouts of their healing journey, what would you tell them?
That healing is ongoing. You know, it's a way that, you know, we can express ourselves and really share to what we are experiencing, because we need that moment to, it's just like release. You know what I mean? Like, we have to release ourselves from the past. We have to release ourselves from old, outdated stories that may have been in our families that we've just maybe carried out unconsciously or something. But once we start to go in this darkness, in the shadow, you know, and that term, you know, has become popularized over the years. And it's like, really getting out of the shadow, because that's kind of like where most people live. Some people live underneath the shadow, but even so, getting up out of that shadow may not look like you have envisioned it to look, but just allow yourself that space for healing to take place, you know, however it may be. And it's just totally, we are the co-creators of this thing, you know what I mean? So we don't have to play into a certain role that causes us more darkness or more distress. And we don't have to carry this, you know, this wave of just sadness over us because something has happened to us. But it's challenging us to be better humans, you know, on the planet, especially with everything that's going on. You know, we want to keep ourselves in alignment with with pure joy in nature, and just love and be in love with ourselves, be in love with our journey and our process, because that opens us up to more of it, more love, more abundance, and more joy. And more experience for life. So yeah.
Absolutely. I could not agree more. So Yashika, if there are people who are interested in learning more about you or working with you, where can they find you? What do you have going on?
Well, I am, you know, I'm always open to work with individuals. I'm always open to have that one-on-one coaching and also expose them and introduce them to the Natural Guys Company, which is my husband and my company. I'm just so super proud of it. And there you can learn more about me and you can learn more about him and us, because we both have our individual journeys, but then we also come together and, you know, you can also witness that magic in our lives that's happening now from both of what we've been through. And so from there, you can work with me with coaching and transformational coaching, which involves, you know, the science of human design and getting through this shadow area. You can work with him. He's a master herbalist if you want to start to explore what that looks like for you in your life. And we're both available for consultations, and our services are on our website at lovetng.com. So that's love, the letter T, ng.com. And so you can just kind of contact us and me through that website.
Wonderful. Well, I am so grateful that we got to connect. I am so privileged that you have decided to share your story like this. I truly believe that when we share stories, we break stigmas, we change lives. So grateful for you. It was such a pleasure to talk to you today.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy that I was able to come and share, and I'm looking forward to hearing others and, you know, just looking forward to just being a part of people's journey and their success in life. So thank you for having me.
Wow, you guys. I hope that you enjoyed Yashika's story. I found her so inspiring, and I hope that you all do as well. A couple of things that I wanted to comment on. Community. She talked a lot about how impactful community was to her in her journey. I second that. I think that that is one of the most important factors in our healing journey. It's one of the things I'm constantly telling my patients and clients. You have to connect with others in order to fully heal. The reason for that is a few different things. One is that it helps facilitate peak experiences. Peak experiences are what help counterbalance trauma, loss, grief in our lives. Peaks and pits, right? Many people's peak experiences involve other people. Those are those moments where we go, man, it doesn't get much better than this. And those moments are so important. Also, group, community, it creates synergy. Synergy is the concept that the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. When we get together, we come up with different ideas and concepts and things that we could never have thought of on our own. Sometimes that's the big missing piece for people. They think, oh, I just can't do this. Or no, it's not that you just can't do it. It's that you can't do it alone. The other thing that Yashika talked a lot about was these old wisdom and ancient traditions such as astrology and things like that, and also newer traditions. Human design is a newer tradition, but I think that those types of tools are extremely powerful for understanding patterns. I believe that life is basically a never-ending pattern, and these tools like astrology, human design, they're there to help us differentiate and figure out what is happening. And I believe that we all sort of have a karmic journey, and there is some sort of energetic imprint. So using those types of tools help us to be able to understand ourselves, to break cycles, and to make new choices and decisions. She also talked a lot about nature, and I am a huge proponent of spending time in nature. I definitely think that it is one of the greatest reset buttons that we have for our nervous systems. Spending time in nature allows us to tune into the natural rhythms and cycles of life. A big part of human suffering comes from overattachment, like I mentioned in the interview. So nature constantly reminds us that things are changing. It's one of the best treatments for anxiety and depression. I know I've seen a quote somewhere that says something to the extent of, Spend at least 20 minutes every day in nature. Unless you're busy, then you need to spend an hour. It's so important for our mental health. I make sure that I get at least 10 minutes of morning sunlight, afternoon sunlight, and evening sunlight. And it makes all the difference in help preventing any type of relapse when it comes to mental illness. It is not a substitute for treatment of depression, but it is a wonderful complement. So I hope that you all enjoyed the interview. Please like, share, comment, and review the podcast. These stories are so important, and the only way that we can get them out there is through sharing them. Share on your social media, share with your friends, leave a review to help the algorithm to get this message out to more people. And thank you so much for tuning in to this week's episode of Nonlinear Healing with Courtney Brooke.